Welcome back to another exciting episode of Angel Insights, the show that delves deep into the world of angel investing, learning from some of the top business angels and their underlying portfolio companies. I'm your host, Tom Britton, co-founder of Syndicate Room, creators of the Axis Venture Fund, and a special shout out to the team at Master Investor for helping us put this show on. This week, I'm delighted to welcome the incredible Sarah Turner, co-founder of Angel Academy, to the show. Sarah's been working with startups for over 10 years. She founded Angel Academy to encourage more women to start investing in startups, as well as to back inspiring and ambitious female-led companies. In today's episode, we're going to be examining the changes seen in the industry since Sarah began angel investing and what more needs to be done to get more women investing and more female-led companies funded. Sarah, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you for joining us.
It's great to be here, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Before we talk about you as the angel, I wanted to get a little flavor for you as the professional. So could you take us a little bit through your journey from university to you becoming an angel and what that journey looked like?
I suppose my start in the tech career was the MSc I did in information systems way back in the 90s. And then from there, got a job in what was called multimedia in the day. I was always very interested in where technology met people. You know, we had ATMs, but we didn't have that much more in terms of everyday technology we were using. So I joined a company that was working in the fledgling multimedia industry. Then actually, while I was there, the internet started to kind of come into offices. And first of all, we had one computer in the whole office that was connected to the internet that we used to email clients from, but gradually it took over. But yeah, you know, I helped the company transition from making multimedia on floppy disks to CD-ROM and then on the internet. Then from there, I joined an organization called Wired Sussex, which I actually ran. There was a network, an existing network of these early multimedia and digital media companies in Brighton. It was just the start of that first dot-com era. Things were really happening. And so the network was set up to kind of promote that cluster and help it grow and bring more companies into the area. And so I ran that for 4 years. It's still going strong. But through that is when I really started to get interested in startups and investment and helping those startups grow. So we did lots of work about helping startups connect with venture capitalists or with angel investors, all of whom were men. Other than there was the woman at Ariadne Capital and I...
Julie Mayer,
that's right, First Tuesday. So we used to go along to those things and she was the lone woman in the whole industry. So it just never even occurred to me that I could be an investor myself or a VC. So I was just happily making these introductions. And to be fair, most of the founders were men as well. So it was this very male dominated environment.
Was this when you set up your own business then? So was this Turner Hopkins or was this a little bit later?
Still a little bit before. I kind of then started doing consulting work and it was around entrepreneurship and working for various government departments and helping small and large companies to collaborate and international companies to collaborate around different areas of technology. And then from there, I set up Turner Hopkins with my Angel Academy co-founder, Simon Hopkins. Yeah, so we did that in 2007. We ran it in different guises, but, you know, working very much in similar areas. But in the background, I started doing a little bit of angel investing myself. And I'm, you know, I'm a fairly modest investor. I knew about tech. I thought I was a decent judge of people, but actually I, you know, there were other areas of investing I didn't understand. So I went and joined various networks and was a little bit dismayed by what I found.
Unfortunately, that doesn't surprise me, but let's talk about what it was that you saw in those first syndicates that you went to.
Actually in these angel networks, it was quite a rude shock because they, you know, typically people from finance backgrounds as well. It was a little bit more patrician than the technology industry, you know, perfectly nice people, but I don't think they really understood what I was doing there. And they made all sorts of assumptions about me, about my risk appetite, about what kind of deals I'd be interested in. And if I'd try and talk to them about technology, they'd talk to me about a baby grow company, for example, or something like that. So it just got me thinking about, well, why aren't there more women here? And I found this amazing statistic that women own 48% of the net wealth. So it made me realize that the barriers to them participating as angel investors are not financial, it's something else. And my observation is these men tend to talk to other men about investment opportunities, not the women in their networks. So it became a self-perpetuating thing.
So was it at that point that you decided, look, I'm going to do something on my own?
You know, actually, I started thinking about the angel network that I wanted to be part of. And I wanted it to be with other women, not just men. And I wanted to be able to work on deals in a more collegiate way. So not just go to pitch events and then negotiate with a founder on my own and make my own investment decision, but actually be able to discuss it with other people that had different experience from mine. So people like Roz, for example.
So clearly the Angel Academy has grown because, as you mentioned, it started as a part-time thing, but now you're doing it as your full-time gig.
Yes. So Angel Academy is full-time for both Simon and I. And, you know, we've got a part-time administrator, so we're still small, but yes, that's what we're doing full-time. So gradually the network grew and, you know, we had to make a decision about whether we were going to do this seriously or not. And by then I really had the bit between my teeth and wanted to prove something about women. Women will invest given the right information. It's not a confidence or a aversity to risk issue. And also that since we set up Angel Academy, we've focused on female founded and female co-founded tech startups. So I also wanted to prove that women could build scalable technology businesses, because that was another thing that I was told by all these male investors, that women were only building niche businesses. And I thought that was hugely unfair.
That is completely unfair. And from the research that we've been doing, companies that have founders from diverse backgrounds, whether that be cultural, gender, or other, tend to outperform those that don't. So let's focus now a little bit on the growth of Angel Academy.
My message was falling on deaf ears largely then. Everyone was telling me that there wasn't the deal flow of female founders. And I was saying, well, look, here, we're seeing massive deal flow because actually women want to pitch to other women, not just rooms of men. It's taken a long time for that environment, the wider environment, to change. But slowly it is changing. I mean, there are way more female founders, even in tech sectors, than there were when we started in 2014, although we were getting good deal flow even then. You will see more women at pitch events now, thank goodness. So you don't have founders just pitching to roomfuls of men. And, you know, we're even seeing some female names on the cap table. They're still in the minority. And then the other thing that's happening in the wider environment is that venture capital firms have really woken up to diversity issues, and they've been very busy hiring women, mainly into junior roles. But you are seeing some women now being promoted into decision-making roles as well. And that's massive. But, you know, there's still more to be done. A lot of the bias, a lot of it unconscious, still exists. And I think until we have diversity in the investor community, we won't get that diversity reflected in the founder community.
Let's talk about that unconscious bias for a second, because I know when you were starting and you were seeing these women pitching to groups of men, you spotted something particular about the types of question that they were being asked versus their male founder counterparts. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, so there's actually been some great research, which is very widely quoted by Dana Cans, was one of the authors of that, about how women get asked prevention questions, whereas men get asked promotion questions. So the questions that go to women focus on the risks and the downside. The questions that go to men focuses on the, you know, the opportunities and the potential for success. And, you know, definitely I couldn't encapsulate it so clearly as that, but I definitely experienced that when I was part of these male networks. So the questions would focus very heavily on the financial aspects or quickly go into a downward spiral. So there wasn't a single woman who got funded through those angel networks when I was part of them.
Yeah, that's terrible to hear. And obviously raising capital on its own is difficult without the additional biases coming into play of not looking or sounding like the investors that you're pitching to. I can't really imagine what that must be like for some of these founders.
Yeah, and I, you know, they are tough environments, those pitch events, especially the male ones. There's a lot of testosterone and competitiveness. They're not hugely supportive. And that's not to say that you've got to be tough to be a founder. This isn't for people with thin skins and fragile egos. You know, you will go through the rough and tumble. You're asking people for their hard-earned money after all, but they're not environments that help women thrive. And what I have noticed at Angel Academy pitch events is that the questions are incredibly thoughtful, incredibly thorough. That diversity in the room is really important to bring out the best in any founder, not just women.
It must be incredibly frustrating to be a female entrepreneur in front of a group of men to see how they ask their male colleagues these questions about, okay, how big could this get? Whereas they're being asked about questions that implied that it won't work. What needs to change and what are you seeing there?
Well, I think that now we know what the problem is, that founders are developing strategies to come back with better answers. So not let themselves be taken down that negative spiral. So I think there's partly founder education has got to kind of help women deal with these questions, but also we've got to kind of shine a spotlight back at the investor community and make them aware of their bias. But the biggest thing that we can do is improve diversity in the investor community. So, and then that diversity will be reflected in the businesses that get invested. And actually, it won't be about gender or ethnicity, will it? It'll just be about the best businesses getting funded. And that's what we all want to see.
No, definitely. Going back to the stats for a second, so between 2011 and 2017, the portion of equity deals secured by teams with at least one female founder increased from 14% to about 22%. You know, it's still not to the 50% where it needs to be. But since 2017, 2018, it's plateaued a little bit. Why do you think that is, and what can we be doing to make sure that continues to go up?
These are all theories, nothing borne out by any solid research so far. But I think what's happened in the last few years, there are just more businesses out there competing for money. Yes, there's more money, but there's extreme competition for it as well. And what I've seen with a lot of investors is a flight to safety. So investing in later stage deals. And actually, if you look at the data about where that money was invested, a lot of it goes into these very late stage mega private equity deals. And because these companies are older and more established, they tend to be male founded. So I think that skews the data a little bit, but the change is painfully slow. We know growing our investor community at Angel Academy, it's a lot of women who are interested in doing this, but actually finding the ones with the capacity to invest takes a lot longer, and their journey to becoming angel investors takes a lot longer. So this is a slow culture change.
Yeah, it takes time to change that culture. But sticking with the angels for a second, we have some data on the amounts being invested by both male and female angel investors. And one thing that we saw was that the check size from the female investors is generally a little bit less than that of the male counterpart. And I was wondering if we could talk about that for a little bit. You know, is this something that has to do with risk aversion? Is it more that women are more likely to be portfolio builders, or is there something else in that stat, or nothing at all, to be honest?
I think the British Business Bank research last year said the average check size is 45,000. Our minimum ticket size is £10,000, and a lot of people are investing at that level. Some invest higher, and frankly, the more established the deal, the more revenue it has, the better it tends to do with the network. We've been around for a long time, so you become quite cynical about these super early stage companies. One of the challenges we have is bandwidth. Women are just super busy. They're doing this on top of either full-time jobs or running their own business or portfolio careers, and they'll have additional family responsibilities. And then during lockdown, when schools were closed, that was quite a hit for women. So they have less time to allocate this. But I think also women have a tendency to give their all to their current job and not allocate enough time for networking and the things that they do outside of work that help them grow as people and professionally. And I wish that could change, that they could be a little bit more sort of selfish like men are in their pursuit of their career. And men will kind of give a lot more time to the networks that they're part of. You know, I think women are overly committed and conscientious about their current jobs. As an example of that, I went and spoke to the senior partners of a law firm, and it was marketed at all of them, but specifically highlighting the gender aspects of what we're doing. And it was a breakfast meeting one morning, and all the men turned up. They were really fascinated, but none of the female partners did. We discussed this with the men. They were saying, I think they're just getting their work in early. They start really early. They work really hard.
There's definitely more that has to be done to, as you say, make it more accessible. And it's not just accessibility from ability to go to an event, but to highlight the importance of that event or the importance of backing startups and backing female-led startups.
And, you know, let's be honest about this. We are asking people to put their own hard-earned money at risk. So there's got to be upside for them. And the financial upside, as we both know, been doing this for years, that it's a long and bumpy road. But I think one of the huge upsides is how angel investing has given various women in our network a platform to grow themselves personally and professionally, speak in public. It's very rare to be an angel investor. It's something else you've got up your sleeve to talk about. And it's absolutely fascinating to see these new young businesses and how they run themselves. And I can't think of anything more stimulating than you could possibly do with your time and money.
Stimulating in the ups and the downs, as you've highlighted, and the bumps along the way. And you're absolutely right. Just learning so much about yourself as an angel and your interaction with the companies you invest in, is you don't get that elsewhere other than being an entrepreneur yourself.
And from other members of the network as well, I learn so much from the other investors in the group, and you know, that brings its own opportunities and rewards, and it's an amazing, valuable network.
I know that Angel Academy do a lot as groups, so the due diligence is shared. So transitioning to that way, you know, and Ross shared it a little bit more, but I'd love to know how you do your own due diligence on a company, what you're looking for, what are red flags, etc.
I'm not doing a huge amount of angel investing at the moment. When I do invest, I lean very heavily on my colleagues in whatever deal team it is. My first investments were on my own, and it was a not very edifying experience, really. I suppose red flags to me are any lack of transparency on behalf of the founder. That makes me very suspicious.
Does that come out from the deck, the questioning, or a bit of both?
It's the questioning, because founders are amazing salespeople. They've got to kind of mobilize good people behind their business. They've got to mobilize investors, customers, everything. So, you know, what goes in the deck tends to be what they want to tell you. There are things that we'll identify in this questioning process that we might not like, or other things that actually, once they've explained it, make complete sense. But if they're not willing to discuss it, that's a red flag. If you don't trust the people who come in early, who are the ones that are going to have your back, that's a strange relationship to want to have with investors. I think I'm much more aware of all the things that can go wrong than I was. Of course I am. That comes with experience, but we can give people that experience quite quickly, so new investors don't have to learn the hard way like some of us did. I've learned to look at financials a lot more closely. This wasn't an area that particularly interested me before, and I'd kind of rely on somebody else who knew more about that to do it. But the business does need to be well capitalized, the salaries need to be under control, all sorts of things are really important, otherwise they will quickly burn through your money and it won't go anywhere. So making sure that their plan is costed, that the round achieves the levels that they say it was going to.
How do you assess the trade-off, though, of being too ambitious versus too conservative with that costing? Because that's something I'm terrible with financials, to be honest. I look at it and I see that things add up, but then I'm always wondering, should they be spending a little bit more on this or that? Or is that less of a concern to you where things are allocated?
Anyone who's been doing this for a while knows that a plan is just a plan. It is going to change. Things will come up. What we're kind of testing during due diligence is their thought processes, how they approach this, and then how adaptable they are should unexpected things come along. So yes, it's not cast in stone. We might push back in some areas, say they've been unrealistic about what hiring costs are going to be, for example, and we've got partners that we can ask what that's likely to be. You get a feel for it. Once you've been through it enough times with enough businesses, you get a feel for what is realistic and what isn't.
And for newer investors, I guess that's the benefit of coming to Angel Academy, getting to learn from individuals like you and Ross and others who have that better gut sense of, okay, this financial is achievable or it's workable, maybe not achievable, but they can adjust within this and go somewhere.
Yeah, to be fair to entrepreneurs, many of them haven't done this before. So we're looking for the ones that will accept some advice if they agree with it, or, you know, actually fine. If they are confident and can push back and give us a good answer, we'll likely accept that as well. And then the other thing about entrepreneurs is that they understand the failure rates, but they don't think it's going to apply to them. So they assume it's just going to be this straight path to huge growth. That optimism and that can-do attitude is important, but, you know, we need to make sure there's some slack in the plan as well.
No, definitely. I want to talk about two of your companies. And the first one I wanted to talk about was Buddy Bounce. I actually knew one of the founders, Emma, from my time at the Train Line. And we stayed in touch, and I was delighted when I heard that they had raised money from yourselves, but they'd also exited the business pretty quickly. So talk us through that from your experience on the investor side. What stood out about them and how things went?
So this Buddy Bounce was actually our first investment at Angel Academy. So it really kind of got us off the ground. So that was way back in 2014. Yes, it achieved an exit, fairly modest, but nice and quick. I remember them pitching to us really well. And at that time, we were quite a small network, all sitting around a long boardroom table. And what really inspired us was them as people. They were very engaged and engaging, and they really had a deep connection to this user base that they had created for their product. And they really understood that user base and recognized just quite how underserved they were. And it did feel like they had something unique and something valuable. It was also a software product, so really had the potential to scale. And then the other thing about it was that they had a couple of brand name B2B customers who were paying not vast amounts of money, but some money on a recurring basis into the company. So we thought there was, like, you know, the seeds of a really exciting business here. And I think that's where we took it. We also had somebody in our network who was particularly excited about the opportunity, and she was prepared to lead the deal, but also to join their board. So, you know, that's something else I've discovered that's important: governance and somebody who's looking after investors on the board of the business.
Well, it sounds like they had good founder market fit and a lot else going for them. Let's talk about another one. Tell me a little bit more about Raremark.
Raremark, founded by Julie Walters. The other Julie Walters, not the actress. It's a technology business that ensures that patients and carers of patients suffering from rare disease have access to the best and most validated information about their rare disease. Because if you go to the GP and you've got motor neurone disease, the GP probably won't have any other patients with motor neurone disease. And, you know, the other compelling thing is that these rare diseases aren't actually that rare when you globally aggregate all the people. So Raremark is providing patients with access to the latest research, validated research, not the nonsense stuff that's sometimes published on the internet, but also access to clinical trials. This was Julie's area of domain expertise as well. She came from that industry, so she really knew what she was doing. And from the get-go, she was focused on scale, scaling and exit, which is very important if you're an angel investor. So we got to know Julie through a mentoring program that we were running. So we actually built up a relationship with her over the course of a year. I was always super impressed by how she handled herself and her focus. And obviously, it's a hugely important area, just from the making the world a better place point of view, but also an increasingly large amount of healthcare budgets are going on treating rare diseases. And this is improving those treatments and improving lives for people who suffer from them.
The ESG, you know, the social impact of companies is becoming a lot more important, particularly with the fund managers and the advisors who help institutional investors and advise clients putting money into funds. So maybe we can revisit that at some point in the future and what that looks like. So Sarah, obviously you have this focus on getting more women to become angel investors and backing teams that have at least one female founder. But as a network, you're not restrictive to only allowing women to be part of the network. What was your reasoning behind ensuring that it was an open network instead of just saying, you know what, we're focused on women and women founders and we'll just have women investors?
Well, I've met lots of great men that are super supportive of female founders and willing to put their money where their mouth is. And I don't think this is a problem that just women should be solving. I think it is for everyone to look at it. But I think what's important to me is that we keep the balance of investors towards women and we keep talking about women because, frankly, they are harder to find and we need to keep the culture quite oriented to the women. And the men that are involved in our network are super passionate about that as well and they're very happy to support it.
So I want to move on into a quick fire session. And what I'd like you to do is just fire off the first thing that comes to mind when I ask you the question. So what's the best book that you've read recently, any genre?
I somehow skipped George Eliot when I was doing my A-level English and I read Middlemarch and Daniel Deronda recently and just amazing books.
I've read neither growing up in the American system. We had a very narrow selection of books. So second question, what's the tech trend that you're most interested at present?
I'm still most interested in artificial and machine learning, not a new trend, but you know, its ability to accelerate and improve decision-making in every area. So disease diagnosis and treatment through to financial decision-making, through to hiring, even later stage investment, I'd say as well.
We're being replaced by robots is what you're telling me.
Well, we're being aided by robots, I think, rather than replaced. You know, Century Tech, which is one of our investments, it's a teaching support tool. So it allows teachers with, you know, big classes of 30 kids to give much more individual feedback to those children. So it's not about replacing the teacher, it's about
enabling.
Yeah.
So I was hoping we could switch gears slightly and talk about what you want to do over the next 5 years, you know, for yourself and for Angel Academy. If I can look back on the last 7 years since you founded it, you've achieved so much. You've been this incredible leading light for pushing gender parity on both the funding side and getting more women into angel investing. You've been an inspiration to us and many others. And I'd love to know what you plan for the future.
Well, thank you, Tom. That's lovely to hear. And glad I've helped move the dial in some way. I want to continue to grow Angel Academy. I think that women, given the right information and the right tools, can and will invest. I think we also are good investors. We're quite thorough in our due diligence. So I'm expecting us to have a good exit before too long. And also just continue to prove that women will build scalable technology companies. And we've got some plans in the pipeline about how we might grow our community and grow our impact. So stay tuned.
Okay, hypothetical situation, 10 years time, 20 years time, whatever it may be, you decide to retire from doing Angel Academy and doing what you're doing.
You know, then, I hope. I'll be ancient.
I chatted with Matt Lerner and I was like, so 10 years time, he's like, 10 years, I'm going to be working until I'm, you know, 80 because I love this. And I was like, okay, next time I ask, I'll make it 20 years.
Well, no, it's all right. I do still see myself working in 20 years, but I don't want to be running Angel Academy. I want to have grown it to a size where there are other people who do more of the day-to-day and I can enjoy being an angel investor and part of the network again. I will stay involved in the business. Of course I will. I love it. It's my absolute passion. But what I want to see ultimately is that this amazingly diverse investor community and this very diverse and flourishing entrepreneur community and lots of people that've had wonderful exits for their technology businesses, because they then become the supporters and the investors in the next generation of business. So it is really important for the future that we have female entrepreneurs having good exits.
Oh, definitely. I mean, if you look at the tech wave in the UK for the dot-coms, and you take like lastminute.com, for example, and you look at what Martha Lane Fox have done and what Brent Hoberman have done, having been the founders of it and now backing and supporting the entrepreneur community, you definitely see that cycle. And so hopefully that next cycle of female founders who do well and exit and come back, you know, as you've said, become those investors, and it continues to increase in terms of percentage, quality, volume, everything.
Yeah, and some of our most successful exited founders are the ones that have set up venture capital funds, so are really investing considerable amounts of money in the next generation. So yes, it is a virtuous cycle.
No, definitely. Last question then, with the benefit of hindsight, I'd love to know, what's the one thing, if it could only be one thing, that you would have liked to have known when you were starting out with your angel journey? What would you have liked to have known?
I'd have liked to have known that there was a group for me to invest with that was kind of more like me, a group that would value what I bought and also would share what they know, because that was the kind of fun and collaborative experience I was looking for and didn't find. And actually, that 10 heads are always going to be better than one when you're discussing investment opportunities.
That's great advice to end on. I'll say thank you one last time, but I'll also say, you know, for those that want to find out more about Angel Academy and maybe come to one of your events, what should they do? Where should they go?
Feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. There's also a form on our website. If you fill that out, then somebody will get straight back to you. So go to the investor page on the Angel Academy website. It's probably the most effective way, because I don't always see everything that comes in via LinkedIn. But
you're too busy for that.
So, well, there's so much. There's so much, isn't there?
That's a good sign though, right? Like you.
Yes. Yes.
Fantastic. Well, Sarah, thank you again for your time. I know we'll be chatting again soon, but hope you have a good rest of your day. And until then.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that episode of Angel Insights with the incredible Sarah Turner. If you want to find out more about what Sarah and the syndicate are up to, you can find them at www.angelacademy.com. That's ACADEME.com. And for more news about Syndicate Room, follow us on Twitter at Syndicate Room or myself at Tom Britton. And we do, as always, hope you'll join us for the next episode of Angel Insights in a few weeks' time. Until then, bye.